On Saturday, April 25th, the Montana Farmers Union, the U.S. Cattlemen's Association, the Montana Cattlemen's Association, and the Northern Plains Resource Council sponsored a debate between the gubernatorial candidates. The debate was split into two sections. First, the Republicans, Attorney General Tim Fox and State Senator Al Olszewski. And the second segment featured the Democratic candidates, Lieutenant Governor Mike Cooney and Whitney Williams. We aired the segment live on Saturday night, the 25th, but we also recorded it so you can hear it again now. We start out with a pre-debate discussion between Walter Schweitzer, president of the Montana Farmers Union, and Tom Schultz of the Northern News Network.
Well, you know, country of origin labeling is critically important, not only to the agricultural producers, but to consumers. Consumers want to know where their food comes from. And Congress repealed the country of origin labeling for beef and pork in 2015. And with this product of USA label, it misleads consumers into thinking they're buying American products mm-hmm. when actually they're buying imported beef.
Yeah, and that's something I know that you guys have worked on and an issue that I think there is avenues to get that sort of straightened out here. Here's a big thing, though, too, and this, everybody's facing a worldwide pandemic, Walter. Fed, states, every locality has taken a hit. But almost all those localities have taken action as well. How's COVID-19, do you think, is it going to affect the producer's decision when it comes to making their decisions on 2020, this 2020 election?
Well, I think the handling of COVID and how our leaders are responding to this crisis is going to be very telling. And I think I know I'm watching. And my vote's going to depend on how they lead through this crisis.
I know. And it's been such a fluid kind of situation as well. Walter Schweitzer is with us, MFU president here. We're ahead of this gubernatorial debate. You guys have done a lot of legwork on this. And we kind of talk about in elections, you know, people, there's a lot of issues, Walter, that will rise to the top, like the economy and jobs and healthcare and spending. Environment, immigration, over and over, those things rise to the top. We've said it, ag touches every issue in Montana to a certain degree, but you don't ever see that, quote, agriculture rise to the top. Does it get taken for granted, or do we just see it as a foundational issue in all of these things?
It is a foundational issue, especially in Montana's economy, but I think even Montanans have taken it a bit for granted. And that's the one thing this COVID crisis has really put a spotlight on is our supply chain. And when you start going to the shelves in the grocery store and not finding stuff that you wanted to buy that you normally buy, it makes you start to think about where it comes from.
Walter, you're going to be with us post game here, right?
That's right.
All right. Good. I'm looking forward to that. MFU President Walter Schweitzer. So thanks. We'll get this started and we'll talk to you in just a little bit.
Looking forward to watching it.
Thanks, Walter. We'll take a time out, and then we do get started. This is the Montana Farmers Union gubernatorial primary debate on the Northern News Network.
The Greater Gallatin United Way, together with the Bozeman Area Community Foundation, have joined together to launch the Southwest Montana COVID-19 Response Fund. This fund has been put in place to rapidly mobilize resources to meet increased needs in our local communities resulting from the COVID-19 pandemic. Those wishing to help people and organizations most impacted during the outbreak in Southwest Montana are encouraged to donate to the Response Fund. One of their philanthropic partners, AMB West Philanthropies, is supporting the launch of this coordinated effort with a $100,000 challenge grant to help leverage donations to the fund by providing a match for the first $100,000 raised. If you'd like to consider making a donation to the fund, you can find more information at greatergallatinunitedway.org on the internet.
Do you need help? Information about resources such as emergency food, housing, financial, or other social assistance? Simply dial 211 and get connected with a trained professional for information and referrals to available resources. Montana 211 is a free, confidential service available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to connect people in need with people who can help. those experiencing emotional stress, are in crisis, suicidal, or worried about someone can also call this number to reach a trained crisis counselor. 211 in southwestern Montana is answered by the Help Center. Go to montana211.org for more information.
Sponsors for tonight's GOP primary and Democratic primary gubernatorial debate are Montana Farmers Union, Montana Cattlemen's Association, United States Cattlemen's Association, and the Northern Plains Resource Council. Stations, we pause 10 seconds for a chance to identify yourselves on the Northern News Network.
This is KGVM Bozeman, Gallatin Valley Community Radio at 95.9 FM and online at kgvm.org.
Sargent is tonight's debate moderator. Long history in broadcasting in ag country. Long history of support for ag organizations, too, like FFA, well known there. Jim has also worked in KSEN in Shelby, Montana, a couple of stations in Great Falls in the ag broadcast industry, and in that career that spans a couple of decades, and we'll leave it at that. Good man for the job. So now from Kohl's Media Studios, here's debate moderator Jim Sargent.
Welcome. Here are the Republican candidates in alphabetical order. Tim Fox is currently serving his second term as Montana's Attorney General. He is a native of Hardin, graduate of the University of Montana Law School. Fox and his wife, Karen, have four children and six grandchildren, and one on the way. Al Olszewski, currently serving as Montana State Senator. He was born in Great Falls, graduated from the University of Washington Medical School. Olszewski and his wife, Nancy, have six children and two grandchildren. Now, we did invite candidate Greg Gianforte, but he has declined our offer. So here are the rules to our debate. Each candidate will have 90 seconds for their opening statement and 1 minute for closing statements. Now, each candidate is allotted 60 seconds to answer the questions. The opponent then will have 60 seconds for rebuttal. Now, I reserve the right to ask follow-up or clarifying questions. Follow-up responses will be 30 seconds. Response rebuttals, when necessary, will also be 30 seconds. So we did do a coin flip earlier, and we want to determine who would start our debate for this evening. And we are going to start with Attorney General Tim Fox. Tim, if you'll start with your opening statement, please.
Hey, thanks, Jim, and thanks to the organizers and the hosts tonight. Really appreciate this opportunity to be on this debate. I want to thank my friend, Senator Al Olszewski, who we've agreed we're going to call by first name. He, to his credit, agreed to 10 debates last year. We've had a lot of trouble, unfortunately, getting the other Republican in the governor campaign to debate us. And I'm disappointed that we don't have Congressman Gianforte here. He declined. And here we are in our homes. Welcome to my basement. And thanks for tuning in to View. I think it's important to note that the organizers of this debate tried very hard to find a time that we could all do it. But unfortunately, Congressman Gianforte declined. I think our leaders need to be present. They need to be a part of the discussion. And Montanans expect us to be transparent and to visit with them. And so that's what I'm trying to do, along with my running mate, John Kanoki. We have developed Montana United, a vision for the future, and it's on our website. We are the only candidates that have a substantive agriculture policy, and that's important for tonight's debate because the subject matter tonight is primarily about agriculture. So thank you for this opportunity, and I look forward to the questions.
Thank you, Tim. Now we'll turn over to Senator Al Olszewski and for your opening comment, Al.
Thank you. Hello, Montana. For the record, I'm Dr. Al Olszewski. I'm much more than just a boy that was born and raised in Great Falls, Montana. And the reason that is because agriculture is personal to me. I'm a great grandson and grandson of homesteaders that pioneered Blaine County and Judith Basin County. I grew up on those same homesteads, learning to serve my family, honor them, and do my very best. Through that, I've developed those hard work ethics of whether it was bucking bales or picking rock. And as a result, even today, I'm a 4-H parent for all six of my children. We support FFA. And as a experienced state senator, I've been on the Senate Ag Committee and the House Ag Committee for the last 6 years, which means that you have taught me the importance of agriculture. It's our number one economy. It is over a $3 billion industry for Montana, and you are important. As such, listening to you, I've voted on many bills, over 100 bills that are very important for our producers in ranching and farming. And the truth is it's because of you. With a 99% ranking from the United Property Owners of Montana and an A rating from the Farm Bureau, I'm here to discuss our vision.
Fantastic. As mentioned, we have flipped the coin, and Mr. Fox will have a chance to answer the first question. Each of our candidates will have 60 seconds to answer that question with a rebuttal, going back to the start of the first person that answered the question. So, guys, if you're ready, I have been asked to ask a bunch of questions from the Montana Farmers Union, and we want to get into it if we can. We are going to talk a lot of agriculture, as you might expect. And I will go to question number one. We'll start this with Mr. Fox or Tim. I'm sorry. We'll make sure that we ask each question for first name. So here we go. Question number one. Consumers want to know where their food originates. In 2015, Congress voted to repeal the country of origin labeling, known as COOL, for beef and pork only. Soon after, multinational packers started putting a product of USA label on beef and pork that is imported and repackaged. This label misleads the consumers into thinking they are buying American beef or pork. We provide you with a bill. The Montana Farmers Union would provide you with a bill like Montana 2005 COOL bill. As governor, would you sign it? Tim, you get to answer the first time.
Sure. So country of origin labeling, or COOL, could be something very, very important to Montana producers. And in its concept, I think it's something that we certainly need to look at. But unfortunately, federal law preempts state action in this area. And I know that Senator Olszewski introduced a bill in the last legislature that died in committee, a lot of debate about it. It is important to know where your products are coming from. And we know that Montana agricultural products are the best in the world. We compete better than anybody. But it's a federal problem that needs to be fixed. And Congressman Gianforte has been absolutely absent from the scene here. He's done nothing. So we need to fix it at the federal level. NAFTA didn't have anything for Montana producers, and the USMCA doesn't either. We need to go back to the drawing board. It needs to be fixed on the federal level, and then we can help Montana producers.
Al, we'll have you give your answer, please.
The answer is yes, I will sign that country of origin labeling bill. You know, I get this idea of the supremacy clause in our Constitution, but if you drill down into it like I did, because I did sponsor the bill here in 2019, is the fact that our federal law doesn't prohibit us from labeling pork and beef. It just says it just removed it from at the federal level. The federal level is silent about whether it's prohibited or not. So by us creating our own COOL bill, I believe that we meet the letter of the law in our Constitution. And we do too. And why should we do it? Well, producers have a right to be very proud of their product and market made in Montana and made in the United States. And our consumers have a right to know. And they get it for about every other food product except for beef and pork. It's not fair. Montana, I'll sign it.
Tim, is there anything that you would like to add or maybe sure. talk about?
I would just say that unfortunately under the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement, the World Trade Organization that is really the referee for that those agreements would have the ability, unfortunately, to add billions of dollars in tariffs on American products if a state or the federal government were to again try to do these kinds of country of labeling laws. So we need to fix USMCA, then we'll have a way forward.
Now, I kind of want to follow up on that question just a little bit, because you said, yes, definitely you want to go ahead and sign that. I hear the argument about where do we get the actual country of origin labeling, the cool label from? Is it when the cattle or pork are born in the United States, or are they raised in the United States? Because if they go outside of the country of the United States, a lot of times Mexico will raise them and bring them back. Your thoughts on that?
Well, that, my bill covered that. Once again, it was whether it was born and raised in the United States, was it produced in the United States, or was it undetermined, or, you know, exported. So those were covered. And one other point is that, again, the World Trade Organization is about as efficient as the World Health Organization is right now. And they're wrong. And here's the deal. They're punishment is against federal law. The way I read it is it's not against state law. So, hey, we'll take him to court.
And Tim, I'll just give you a chance. Go ahead, Tim. I'll give you a chance to say something there.
Well, so Senator Oshesky's bill, Senate Bill 206, I believe, put the onus on the retailers, the grocery stores. They were the ones that were going to be penalized if the country of origin labeling was incorrect or wasn't on there. And that's one of the problems with that bill, unfortunately, because the retailers, the grocery stores, have no control over, you know, where the cattle were raised, where they were slaughtered, where they came from, what country.
Gotcha. Okay. Let's move on to the next question, guys. Question number two, and we will start with Al on this one. Access to affordable and reliable health care is critical. It is crucially important to all Montanans. Without health insurance, they are one health event from bankruptcy, and I think we'd all agree to that. Will you continue Medicaid expansion in Montana, and how will you ensure affordability, reliability, health care for Montanans?
Well, number one, my goal as a physician, as a state legislator, is to find a better solution than Medicaid expansion. Medicaid expansion it's a broken system, and we threw everybody into a broken system, and that's not right. So my intent as your next governor is to replace Medicare and then repeal it. So here's one of my ideas. I had carried a bill. It was killed very quickly last session by those that were fighting to protect Medicaid expansion. And it's this. If you pay for your health insurance out of your own pocket, then you should get from the state of Montana a refundable tax credit to the amount of that premium, or to the level of what we pay for Medicaid expansion for a healthy male who has no children. So that's $9,000 per healthy adult per year. And that's a winning solution. Remember, healthcare is not a right or a privilege. It's a common good. And we can decide that as Montanans who should receive it. And a refundable tax credit will go a long ways to doing that.
Same question to you, Tim.
So I'm a cancer survivor. I don't play politics with people's health. This COVID-19 pandemic has really, I think, shed a light on the things in our healthcare system that work and those that don't, particularly in rural Montana. Now, over the last year, I have visited over 25 critical access hospitals, large hospitals in our big cities, and everything in between. And I've met with healthcare officials, lawmakers, leaders, et cetera. And we've talked about what do we need to do going forward. And my running mate and I have a healthcare strategy. It's on our website at foxforgovernor.com. Again, the only candidates that have any substantive strategies or policies going forward. I invite people to go look at it. It's a conversation. We want to hear from you. So we absolutely need to take care of our rural healthcare hospitals and clinics. They are the backbone of the health of our communities. And I know this because I grew up in Hardin, Montana.
And Al, I'll give you a chance to rebuttal anything he said.
Well, once again, you know, when it comes to the government, they pay healthcare system, whether it's the federal or state, about 60 cents on the dollar, the actual cost of providing that healthcare. That extra 40 cents on the dollar is then pushed onto our farmers and our ranchers that increases the cost of their healthcare, therefore increasing the cost of their health insurance. As your next governor, I'm going to make sure that if the government promises to pay for healthcare, they pay the true cost of it so that your costs can actually drive down because you're paying out of your own pocket.
Yeah, and I think that's a subject that we could expand on for quite a while. Time is just not going to allow us to do that. And so it'll be interesting to see how we move forward with healthcare here in the state of Montana.
Can I just add real quick? Dr. Al here is the outlier on this subject because Congressman Gene Forte, in an interview on Montana Public Radio, said that he supports Medicaid expansion.
Okay. Tim, we'll come to you with the next question. We're going to move to renewable energy. Renewable energy has become an important source of income for many property owners, workers, and counties around the state of Montana. What are your plans for renewable energy and the economy in Montana?
So the Montana energy policy absolutely has to be all of above. This week on the state land board, I voted to approve a 750-megawatt wind turbine generation project that will soon be coming to Montana. But we also have the largest coal reserves in the nation. And we have to understand that that's a valuable resource, too. And so biofuels, it's another area. And that's some place where agriculture has a role. And I support the research that Montana State University is doing on biofuels. But we have to understand that these things have to be commercially viable and stand on their own feet without subsidies and mandates. That, I think, is very important. And as an ex-oil and gas geologist, I understand we have to have oil and gas in our state, too. So we have to have an all-of-the-above energy strategy. Montana can do it. We also need to be more efficient.
And Al, let's talk about renewable energy.
Again, I encourage the research and the development of all energy, but especially here in Montana, we need to look at our specific needs, especially for our rural and our frontier communities. And the truth is that wind and solar is not going to cut it when the temperature is 35 to 40 below zero for weeks on end. We need to make sure that we do not leave coal, hydroelectric, and oil and gas or natural gas energy, especially electricity generation, behind. We need to continue to nurture them and work hard and make it a 21st century proposition. Because once again, at 30 below zero, the wind don't blow. And a lot of times the sun don't shine. And if it does, it won't travel down those very, very cold electrical wires. That's the science, and that's practical. So we still need coal. We still need natural gas. We need our natural resources in this state, and I will continue to promote those.
Right on, yeah. Let's get to the elephant in the room, I guess, the COVID-19. Obviously, the pandemic has altered all of our lives. We've all been affected by it. You might say we're living through history right now. Many people have been forced to work online due to the stay-at-home orders. Seed stock producers have been dependent on the internet, to sell their bulls, their auction on the internet. Many market services, government portals, jobs, educational opportunities, and more rely on the internet. This has been underscored by the importance of the need for broadband access in rural Montana. I think we go to Alex to start this one. What would you do to ensure all Montanans have access to high-speed broadband and cell services throughout the state of Montana?
So, you know, I'll sign the same bill that I helped champion and work with in 2019. The truth is that as we move forward with broadband and push it into our rural and frontier areas, that it's very expensive for private companies to do so. And I advocated giving tax credits and no property tax for 10 years on those fiber optic lines and all the infrastructure that would take it out to Shodo, to Weibo, to take it over to Darby. It's very important that we understand that rural and frontier broadband communication is going to have to be a private-public partnership, just like it was when we brought electricity to the rural areas of our state. It's a common good, and everybody needs to have access to it, and that means we have to be very creative.
Tim, broadband, how do we get into the state of Montana?
Well, my running mate, John Kanoki, and I have already started tackling this issue. And in our strategies on our website at foxforgovernor.com, you will see several references, particularly in our ag policy, and our healthcare policy, and our education policy. Precision ag is a big deal, and it can make Montana farmers and ranchers more competitive in the region and the world. We need to have rural broadband. The COVID-19 pandemic has really underscored the fact that, say, in education or telehealth, Montanans, many of them don't have access to fast broadband internet. And so John and I have been working on it. We've met with university officials and telecom people. We've met with the extension offices. And this is unfortunately somewhat complicated because there's federal grant monies, but there's a competition there among the telecom companies. And they have worries about who's going to get the benefit of this. But I'm the unifier. I'm the guy that can bring the people together to get this done.
I'll start with you, Tim, and I want to just kind of follow up or clarify this a little bit. The next governor is going to have some work to do to get this economy back on track, obviously. How do you do that?
Well, you know, thankfully, we've got a rainy day fund. We also have some other opportunities there. Montana will get $1.25 billion from the federal government because of the pandemic. And I've called on our governor to make sure that he saves some of that and doesn't spend it all or commit it all before the emergency is over under his emergency powers. But we're probably going to have to tighten our belt. We're going to have to find ways to get through this. And one of the things that's been suggested is the Coal Trust Fund. Now, people are reluctant to tap into that, but that's an asset to look at.
Al, let's go to you. How do we get the economy back up and running?
Again, what we need to do is we're going to have to take care of all of our producers. And now, in the state of Montana, we're not going to be able to help choose the price of hanging weight beef or what they're going to pay for it on the hoof or what our crop prices are going to be. But here's how we help protect our farmer and our rancher and our producer is that, yes, the government has to share in the sacrifices and the hardships that are occurring. And we're going to see in 2021 in the legislature, we're going to see a fiscal crisis like we've never seen before. And we got to make sure that we don't crush our number one economy, agriculture. So we're going to have to find a way to lighten up on our fees and our taxes going to our producers as well as our other business people. And yes, we have a rainy day fund, but the governor's running through it. I don't have the other part of this is
okay,
that,
move on with him, but yeah.
Yeah, it's my idea to use the coal trust as one of the ways that we open it up, use it for this rainy day. It's over $1 billion. And then through that situation, what we do is we'll heal it in the future. But right now,
time, Tim.
We need to take care of it.
Time, Al. I'm sorry. We're going to go to Tim for the next question. Thank you, Al. Tim, this question is for you. It is years of low commodity prices have contributed to increasing stress of Montana farmers. Regrettably, we have seen an uptick in the number of farmers' suicide across the country. What can be done to address rural mental health and prevent the high rate of suicide in farm country, Mr. Fox?
Well, and actually our high rate is statewide. It's one of the highest per capita in the nation. And I was particularly disappointed when the legislature gave the governor some discretion when we were having revenue shortfalls a couple of years ago. Instead of cutting the fat, he cut mental health services and other necessary things that government really has a moral obligation to participate in. So under a Kanoke and Fox administration, we're going to be able to shift some of our budget back over to help with mental health services. We want to take care of those who are in crisis. And frankly, while it's a humane thing to do, it's also a fiscally conservative thing to do, because the more you take care of those issues with folks and help them on the upfront, the less it's going to cost down the road. Certainly, we want to improve their lives. That's most important. And I've been all across the state talking to mental health and health providers, and we have a plan. It's on our website.
Mr. Olszewski, your turn.
You know, once again, this is not something I promise. It's something that I've already done. Over the last 6 years, we have worked hard on rural and frontier healthcare and mental health care. As well, I'm the champion and received awards on fighting to reduce suicide. And guess what? We have. And one of those big issues for rural and frontier areas is that we've fought to give maximum use of our licenses for our PAs, nurse practitioners in mental health. We've worked hard to bring mental health into your family practice area to work with, and we've provided funding. And yes, as we go into 2021 and we're going to hit another fiscal crisis, we will not do what Bullock did, which was destroy our mental health issue. We need to continue to work with our public-private partnerships in mental health, and we need to make sure we pay them by increasing the provider rates so they'll come to the rural and frontier Montana.
I think it's a very important issue that we will be seeing more on, I believe. So, yeah. We'll stay with you, Al, and ask our next question. How can agriculture and the government work together to address climate change? There's been a lot of talk about that.
Well, again, as we look here, we have already seen that without mandates placed on us, whether at the federal level or the state level, that our carbon emissions have been dropping by efficiencies, whether it's in, you know, in especially in our motor vehicles and our agriculture equipment. And now we're seeing it's our across the state and the country. It is our buildings that are where we're seeing the most carbon emissions. Here's the thing. Is that we've watched, especially no-till technique as being one of the best agricultural ways of reducing carbon transmissions and trying to help with our climate. You know, I'll work with anybody who wants to. As a conservationist, I believe that we need to leave our state better than how we found it.
And Tim?
So, well, here's where agriculture, again, can play a key role, because our farmers and ranchers are the best stewards of the environment there ever was. Yeah. And they want to make sure that, that what they do is sustainable, and they're all about a clean and healthful environment. So, again, I think we leverage public-private partnerships. The research that Montana State University is doing on biofuels is very promising. They're a leader in the nation in this area. It has to be something that's commercially viable, but our farmers and ranchers can play a key role in those alternative ways of getting energy. Again, though, we need to make sure we have an all-of-the-above policy that doesn't penalize the folks who are most unfortunate, that maybe can't afford higher electricity prices or higher gas prices. So there has to be a way forward. Again, I'm a unifier. I'm going to work with people to make sure that we come together and figure it out and get it done.
We will stay with you, Mr. Fox, and go on to our next question. Let's talk food safety. Food safety policies can and should protect consumers without limiting farmers, ranchers, and small food processors who sell into the local markets. How will you, as governor, promote local food production and marketing opportunities for Montanans?
Well, listen, we need to trust bust the meat packer monopolies, and we need to get back to supporting local processing of our producers' products. And we can do that through co-ops, but you need to have a leader at the top that is incentivizing it, and we need to all work together on that. And this is something that I've been giving a lot of thought to because of the allegations that the big multinational meat processors have been price fixing, not just during the COVID-19 pandemic, but for many, many years. And that's why Attorney General William Barr called me, and he wanted to talk about pandemic fraud and price gouging. And I brought up the meat packer issue. He promised to get someone back to me about that. My office and a trust lawyers have been looking into it. And then just yesterday, Mr. Macon Delrim, who is the top antitrust lawyer in DOJ, called me to discuss this issue. We got to bust the meat packers, bring the processing home, because our products are the best.
And Al, we'll ask you the same question.
You know, once again, as a proven state legislator, we've worked on this since in 2015. We worked on the local level to relax the regulations so that you could go to farmers markets and you could move your product. Yeah, an example is raw honey. But also if you process it and you create a cottage industry in the food arena. At the state level as well, we have seen that we need to find a way to bring back and our processing, not only in livestock. So if we look at that, we need to make sure that we are not dependent on out-of-state packers. We see these monopolies. And quite honestly, as your governor, I'm going to be the squeaky wheel that will push on the Congress to pass the Primes Act. That's the, you know, process revival of Interstate Meats Exemption Act. And what we need to do is make sure that local producers can sell meat in restaurants and in our schools and in our groceries here locally without the interference of our federal government.
I want to stay on that same topic of food. And We'll go to Al first on this one. After the Japan bilateral agreement, the USMCA, and China phase one deals were signed, the already low agricultural commodity market went down or stayed the same. Within weeks of signing the phase one deal, China bought 1 million tons of wheat from Australia, Canada, and France, not one bushel from the United States. We are selling less to those countries now than we did before. What is your plan to help get those markets back?
Well, you know, on this point, we are in a trade war, and we're in a trade war with China, and it's true. So a two-point prong. Number one is that there are tariffs. And as we've heard from our president, hundreds of millions of dollars are being brought in from China without elevating the price on consumer goods. Well, as your squeaky wheel governor, I'm going to fight for every portion, every dollar, every cent that should be going to Montana's agriculture producers for being victims in this trade war. And then number two, as your best salesman, my job is to get out not only within our state and talk about buying local and working on a more like a beef Montana or pork Montana, like we have wheat Montana. Let's sell our products here. But I'll go from state to state, work on interstate compacts to see if there's a way that we can move meat and product out to the West in return for some product that they have on the West Coast or East Coast. I'm going to fight for you and be your best salesman.
Tim, how do you get those markets back?
Well, yeah, I would agree that the Japan bilateral agreement has not been all that good for Montana agriculture. And trade is certainly, international trade is an important place for Montana products to be, because Montana products win in competition in a fair playing field. And that's one of the reasons I brought John Kanoke on as my lieutenant governor candidate. John was the global corporate strategist for John Deere Corporation, and he advised the John Deere CEO and board of directors on how to put $35 billion worth of revenue out into the market. The guy knows trade inside and out. He knows the markets, and he's a genius in that area. And so we've already been rolling up our sleeves. Unfortunately, a lot of this is the federal responsibility. And again, where's Greg Gianforte? He's done absolutely nothing for Montana producers.
Let's follow up with this and kind of tie this in with what's going on with the coronavirus. The Holcomb fire and the coronavirus have put a spotlight on our food supplies. We've all been tested with that. Mm-hmm. And it's broken, in a sense. Since the beginning of the crisis, multinational packers have been charging 20% more for meat to consumers and paying 30% less to producers. This, in the mind of the eyes of the Montana Farmers Union, is price gouging. What action would you take to promote a competitive and fair marketplace?
So this is my turn.
This is for me?
It should be Tim, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm not waiting to be governor to do something. As I mentioned, my office has been looking into this for quite some time, and our antitrust lawyers have been looking into it. We've been working directly with the federal government. Now, it's obvious that the federal government has a much bigger hammer, and that's where we're really looking for some help there. I'm the only candidate for governor, Democrat or Republican, who's actively working in this area. And as I mentioned, when Attorney General William Barr called me to talk about how the state attorneys general, I'm the president of the National Association of Attorneys General, could help on fraud and scams related to the pandemic, I raised the issue of meat packer price fixing. And now we have the attention of the top lawyers in the government, with the top antitrust lawyer at the United States Department of Justice, who just called me yesterday. We had a very substantive discussion about this. So I'm going to continue to look into it. We're going to continue to press, and we're going to try to get something done.
Al, your thoughts?
So again, as a proven state legislator, we've already been producing legislation to work on this issue. One example, when we were fighting and, you know, on pulse crops, trying to get processing that had to go out of state, we created legislation to make sure that we had a favorable environment for pulse crop processing facilities to occur here. We need to do the same when it comes to meat processing and packing. That Primes Act that I said, it's been sitting for years at Congress and it hasn't moved. And we'll be a squeaky wheel pushing on that. And if they don't, I'll promote a state version of that and we'll sign it here. And we will work to make sure that our meat processors here can produce and cuts of meat that can be sold in our state. And then we'll work hard to try it through interstate compacts to see if we can do that with our neighboring states. We've got to work on it, and it's time to do it is now. We just shouldn't look into it. We need to do it now.
Yeah, I think we really got to protect our ranchers with a little over a million people in Montana and 1.5 million cattle out there. We got to take care of them. So I think that's important. Al, we'll stay with you with our next question. And Montana Agricultural Research and Experiment Stations have played a very critical role in educating our producers on new crops and farming practices. Will you support the state funding necessary for staff, faculty, and technology to bring state-of-the-art resources and research to Montana farmers and ranchers?
The answer is yes, yes, and yes. As again, over the last 6 years on the ag committees, we've worked on making sure that they were appropriately funded, and if not more. And quite honestly, our agricultural extension and our research institutions, our infrastructure needs to be updated to the 21st century. And I will support that and promote it, and we'll sign the legislature and or the legislation and the appropriations for that. It's what we need to do is remember, we need to constantly be working on the science of our that will promote our number one economy that is over $3.5 billion. And we understand that with the changing of climate, as well as the change of the economy, we have to be adapt so we can overcome. And our research agricultural stations have played a critical role, and I've got their back.
Tim, same question.
Yeah, the answer there is yes. Obviously, investing in the number one industry in Montana, agriculture, is smart for every reason. It's smart to our economy. It's smart on jobs. It's just smart on our way of life here. The foundation of what makes Montana great rests on agriculture. And that's why I've been endorsed by people like Joe Goggins, Taylor Brown of Northern Broadcasting, and Jim and Susie Felton, and many others in the ag industry, because they know I have their back. They know I'm a small town kid from Montana who knows the importance of agriculture because it's in my DNA. So, and I've been to the Northern Agricultural Research Center in Havre and seen the great work that they do. And they're basically living hand to foot with the little amount of money that they're getting. But there's big returns in those investments, and we need to do better. And we need to start with our kids, get them interested in ag and FFA and 4-H, and then build on that.
So let me ask you this then. What are your plans for Montana Agricultural Research Center and the experiment stations? What would you actually do here?
Well, we need to look at getting more money to them. Now, having said that, with the COVID-19 problem, we're going to have some very serious fiscal situations to have to address. But we always need to prioritize in government. We need to understand what makes our economy hum, and that is agriculture, tourism, healthcare, education. It's all of the above, but agriculture is at the beginning of all of that. So as we face those tough fiscal situations, let's don't shortchange the ag industry.
And Al, what would be your plan for Montana Agricultural Research and Experiment Station?
Once again, we need to continue to invest in our soil science, because all wealth comes from the ground. So we need to make sure that our soils are maintained and we continue to steward the soil and pass it on to the next generation. Number two, crop diversification. As a state senator, we've fought hard, and we're number one in the country pushing on the idea of hemp production and to work on how we can make that a viable product. Same thing with pulse crops. And we can do that for every sector of our agriculture producing community.
I want to move on to the water compact here, guys, and talk a little bit about that. I know the CSKT water compact was ratified in the Montana legislature in 2015. Water is obviously our state's most vulnerable resource, and the CSKT water compact project and the resources. Many farms and ranches depend on their water rights. The CSKT water compact will provide certainty for water usage on the Flathead Reservation, as well as statewide removing the threat of litigation, and it must be ratified by Congress. If elected as governor, how will you assist in the ratification of the CSKT Water Compact? Tim, we'll go to you.
Well, I've already assisted in that process. When it got derailed in the 2013 legislature, that piece of legislation, people started suing one another, which is exactly what that was piece of legislation was supposed to avoid. So I brought all of the players and stakeholders together. We got those lawsuits stayed. And in the 2015 legislature, as you said, the legislature got it passed and was signed into law, but it has to be ratified by the Congress. And the Gianforte bill that's before Congress right now, he says that he helped draft. I'm glad that he's finally supporting that. There are some issues with land swaps that take state leases away from farmers and ranchers on the reservation and give them nothing in return. I'm not sure why they threw that in the Gianforte bill. It's only causing problems. But yes, I've already worked to get the CSKT Water Compact going forward. It will settle many issues and it'll avoid decades and decades of litigation. There are not enough water lawyers in the world to take care of all the litigation. That's over half of the landmass would be involved in litigation, reopening settled water rights, and it would be horrible.
Okay. Al, same question. Elected governor, how will you assist in the ratification of the CSKT Water Compact, Al?
You know, I'm the only governor candidate in this whole race, Democratic or Republican, that is against the Water Compact. In 2015, I voted against it. It's unlawful. It's unconstitutional. And we need hours to talk about it. But let me bring up this one issue, because my side of the state, 350,000 users and ranchers and irrigators and farmers are on the table. And it's our water that's being forfeited to try to protect the water of central and eastern Montana. Now, I get it. You're trying to protect your water over there in eastern Montana, and you should. The big thing about this is that once it's ratified by the federal government, Aboriginal water rights are the law of the land. And that means your children and grandchildren are going to have to fight against the Crow tribe for water in the Yellowstone River Basin and the Blackfoot tribe for water in the Missouri and the Milk Basin. Mm-hmm. So it's not over. Constitutional water rights are worth fighting for, and I'll create that $55 million water defense fund, and I'll protect your water as we do protect Western Montana.
And how do we go ahead and fight for that, Al? How do we go ahead and continue that battle to make sure it's working in our favor?
You certainly, because here's the thing. After the fiscal year of 2019, so June 30th of 2020, or 2019, what we saw is that we now at the state, if it can modify it or withdraw from it and take it out of our law. And what I see is that we repeal it. We do need a compact, and we come to the table where everybody's at the table and nobody's on the table. And once again, we'll take that $55 million and repurpose it for a water defense fund for all Montanans.
Tim, I want to give you a chance to answer that as well.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what. Al, I'll stick to practicing law and you can stick to practicing medicine. None of what you said is actually true. The state Supreme Court has upheld the constitutionality of the Water Compact. It's not illegal. And your assertion that somehow the CSKT Water Compact opens up water rights all across the state, including on the Crow Reservation, is absolutely a fallacy. The Gianforte bill, while it has some issues outside of just the core CSKT Water Compact that the legislature passed in 2015, that's solid. The other issues that he has interjected into that, I would agree, has some problems. They need to be fixed. Hopefully, can get that fixed before he leaves Congress and abandons that seat.
Thank you. Enjoy the answers, guys, both ways.
I need my 15 seconds.
Well, we're going to go to our close right now, Alan. We'll give you a chance to say it right here. We are going to wrap it up. Time has allowed us to move forward. Great answers. I enjoyed them. We will go to you, Senator, and start with your closing comments now, if you would, please.
You bet. Hey, you know, Montana, these are uncertain times. We are watching a coronavirus pandemic that has shook our state to its core. And this may be an economic crisis greater than the Great Depression and a health crisis greater than the Spanish flu. And at this time, we need a leader that has the qualifications and experience to actually lead Montana through this so that we're successful. As a former Air Force officer, as a medical doctor who understands this issue of what the virus is, and as a state legislator that understands what it's going to take to actively work to get Montana going with a sense of urgency, I'm your guy. And again, I'm going to fight for you like I fight for my own constituents on the water. And it, again, when it comes to the water compact, we're going to fight for your constitutional rights. And Tim, I will continue to make law and you can continue to practice law.
We go to our closing comments with you, Attorney General, Mr. Tim Fox.
Well, back to the subject matter of tonight's debate. It's clear that agriculture is vitally important to our state. It's the foundation of our economy. And farming and ranching in those communities that are dependent on farming and ranching embody the best of Montana values. And as a native Montanan, I know this. Our communities thrive when agriculture thrives. And farmers and ranchers, they don't stop what they're doing for disasters or emergencies. They keep on going. And our ability to overcome emergencies and disasters, I believe, is dependent on the health of our agricultural industry. I'm a unifier. I bring people together, but more importantly, I show up. I show up today, and thank you, Dr. Al, for being here, and I tackle the tough questions. I don't avoid the public, and I don't avoid the debate. And I believe that there's more that we can agree on than we disagree on. Statesmanship and leadership are important here. You got to be present. Absentee candidates don't get it done. So working together, we're going to get through this pandemic, and please go to foxforgovernor.com. I would appreciate your support, and thanks for watching.
Thank you both so very much for being a part of our debate here, and we'll have a brand new governor coming up, our 25th governor for the state of Montana, coming our way in November. Gentlemen, we appreciate it. Thank you so much, and thank you for being a part of our debate.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks, Al.
A special thanks to Montana Farmers Union for sponsoring this Montana gubernatorial debate.
Hello, this is Walter Schweitzer, president of Montana Farmers Union. Voters have a right to know where candidates for governor stand on issues like truth and labeling, trade, and health care. Montana Farmers Union is proud to host a virtual primary gubernatorial debate to explore these and other issues. Let's make agriculture and rural issues a priority this election.
You are listening to the debate on KGVM Bozeman tonight. We are on the air at 95.9 FM and online at kgvm.org.
The Bozeman Daily Chronicle, Gallatin Valley's newspaper. The Bozeman Daily Chronicle, empowering the community. Online at bozemandailychronicle.com and available through subscription in print or online.
Here are the Republican candidates in alphabetical order. We start with Mike Cooney, who is currently Montana's lieutenant governor and has a long career in public service. With terms in the House of Representatives, State Senate President, and Secretary of State, Mike is from Butte and is married to Deanne. They have three grown children. Whitney Williams is founder and CEO of Missoula-based Williams Works. She was raised in Helena in a political family. Her father was a longtime Montana congressman and her mother, a member of the state Senate. Whitney is a graduate of the University of Montana. So here are the rules to our debate. Each candidate will have 90 seconds for their opening statement and 1 minute for closing statements. Now each candidate is allotted 60 seconds to answer the questions. The opponent then will have 60 seconds for rebuttal. Now I reserve the right to ask follow-up or clarifying questions. Follow-up responses will be 30 seconds. Response rebuttals, when necessary, will also be 30 seconds. We did a coin flip earlier today to determine who would start our debate for tonight. And Mr. Mike Cooney will be the first one to get us started. Mike, if you would, please.
Thank you very much, Sarge, and thanks very much to all the sponsors. I am Mike Cooney. I'm a lifelong Montanan, and like many Montanans, My roots run deep in this state. And like many Montanans, my roots begin in agriculture. My great-grandfather had a successful ranching operation in Beaverhead County. And it was a great thing. And he, in fact, my great-grandfather registered the very first brand, the Square and Compass, in the state system. Now, although I'm proud of my heritage, it doesn't make me a farmer or a rancher. I'm not. But understanding my roots has given me a great appreciation for the contributions of agriculture throughout the state and throughout the state's history and what it means for our future. I've dedicated my life to serving the people of Montana, and that includes Montana farmers and ranching families. And I've had many different positions in public office, and I know how important it is that state government is a strong partner to agriculture. Montana farmers and ranching families are facing incredible challenges even before the COVID situation. Now more than ever, it's clear how critical it is we have a safe and abundant food supply system and that our communities are strong and resilient in the face of an unprecedented crisis. Montana farmers, ranchers, and our agricultural communities are integral parts of our economy. As governor, I promise you'll have a strong advocate and a partner in the governor's office, and I look forward to this great debate today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. And now we'll turn it over and have our opening statement from Whitney Williams. Whitney, if you would, please.
Thanks so much to the Montana Farmers Union. Farming and ranching are centrally important to our economy and to our identity here in Montana. And that's why I picked third-generation farmer Buzz Matlin from Culbertson to be my running mate. Buzz and I are proud to be endorsed by farmer and former Governor Brian Schweitzer. And our egg policy, which you can find on our website, strengthens family farms and ranches, invests in rural communities, and in sustainable agriculture. I'm a sixth-generation Montanan and a businesswoman. I started my own successful company nearly 20 years ago, working alongside Fortune 500 companies and charities around the world to solve complex problems. I've helped farmers get back on their feet, produce products, and find new markets. Our Montana is at a crossroads. We're facing new challenges and a changing economy, and now, coronavirus. We need someone with business experience, a fighter, who will bring big, bold ideas to Helena and who's tough enough to take on the new challenges ahead. This virus shook our economy and brought Montana to a standstill. I'm the only Democrat running for governor who's created jobs and helped rebuild communities after disasters. And as we pick up these pieces, I'll have a farmer right by my side to help tackle the challenges and envision the opportunities for all of Montana. Bringing Montana out of this crisis will take energy, new ideas, and I believe a new generation of leadership. I'd be honored to represent the last best place and the first place we call home.
Thank you. We do have a number of questions that have been submitted to us by the Montana Farmers Union, a lot of agricultural questions, as you might expect. We'll alternate back and forth with our questions. We're going to start with you, Mike. Question number one is this one. Consumers want to know where their food originates. In 2015, Congress voted to repeal the country of origin labeling, known as COOL, for beef and pork only. Soon after, multinationals, packers, started putting a product of USA label on beef and pork that is imported and repackaged. This labeling misleads consumers into thinking they are buying American beef or pork. The Montana Farmers Union provides you with a bill like the Montana 2005 COOL bill. As governor, would you sign that bill? Mike, you go first.
Thank you very much. That's a great question. Let me give you a little history on what I've done with COOL in the past. In 2005, I was a state senator serving with my good friend, who's also endorsed me, U.S. Senator John Tester. He was the main sponsor of the COOL bill. I was fighting right by his side to get that passed, and I was delighted to do it. I believe in the COOL program. I think it's very necessary. I absolutely think the questioner is correct. The current system that they have in the United States is not legitimate. It does not let people know where that beef was raised. It was just processed in the United States. Absolutely. I would be more than happy as governor to take a good COOL bill like we saw in 2005 and make sure that it became law again in Montana.
Whitney, we'll give you the same question, please.
Great. So yes, absolutely. Look, it's just plain wrong that beef and pork from Mexico or Canada can be labeled as a product of the USA when it's just processed here. It's wrong for consumers and it's wrong for producers. Look, over 80% of America's entire beef and pork supply runs through just four producers. And that is just not okay. Packers are making record profits while decimating producers. Montana has some of the highest quality beef on the planet, but we've lost our leverage. I'll bring it back. We have the product, we have the quality, and we need to bring the leverage back to producers, period. I have experience working with farmers, for example, ensuring we bring leverage to small coffee farmers in Puerto Rico or cocoa farmers in the Congo. And we certainly can do that here in Montana. I count myself really lucky to be able to buy local beef here from Oxbow, but we need to do more to showcase Montana beef. And everything that's made in the USA, we should, by God, know it's all made in the USA.
I do want to follow up just real quick on this. Whitney, I'll start with you.
Sure.
And the argument that the Montana Farmers Union has heard several times is, should the country of origin labeling market be where the animal is born or where it is raised or fed at? Where should that label be?
Yeah, so you know what I would do there is I would work with local Montana producers, ranchers, to help us make that decision. I think what we need to do first and foremost is make sure all those folks are at the table when important decisions like this get made. And at the end of the day, we need to make sure that we represent everything we can, get them everything we can so that they can, in fact, sell here at home and around the United States.
And Mike, I'll give you a chance to answer that too. Is the labeling come from where the animal is born or where it's been fed out at?
I think the labeling has to show where that product has actually been raised and where it's been produced and where it's been handled mostly. And again, I think you've got to work with the people, our local farmers and ranchers on this. And I just think that, again, we know that Montana products, no matter what, our Montana commodities are viewed as premium products. They really have a great following. Everywhere I go, people want to know how they can get Montana products. We need a system that will actually make sure that when people say they're getting a Montana product, it is a Montana product.
Thank you. We will go to Whitney on our next question then. Healthcare. Access to affordable and reliable healthcare is critically important to all Montanans. Without health insurance, they are just one health event from bankruptcy. Will you continue Medicaid expansion in Montana? And how will you ensure affordable, reliable health care? Whitney?
Yeah, well, it sure is critically important. First, I'd make sure that we get the funding we need to keep critical access hospitals open. And I'd make sure that they have the technology that they need for telemedicine. Medicaid expansion, absolutely. What we know is that 100,000 before COVID folks were on Medicaid. That's 10% of our population. We most certainly need to make sure that we expand that. And we have until 2025 before the sunset happens. In the next session, I'd like to ask the Department of Public Health and Human Services and the Department of Labor to share what's working well and let us know what changes maybe need to be made. And frankly, if it's working well now, why wait to permanently reauthorize it? Our rural hospitals need to know that they're going to be there for the long haul, and so do Montana's families.
Mike, same question. Would you continue Medicaid expansion to Montana, and how would you ensure affordable, reliable health care?
Well, I had the privilege before the last legislative session of traveling around the state and meeting with our rural hospital administrators, even consumers in the rural areas of this state, to talk about how important Medicaid expansion was. And it really was one of the ways that we were able to go into the last legislature prepared, build a bipartisan coalition of people, and get Medicaid expansion reauthorized. Absolutely. It is incredibly important. If we want to maintain and keep our rural health structure as good as it is today and not have to see it fail as we've seen it fail in other states, we have got to build on Medicaid expansion. We have to make sure we're doing everything to demonstrate how important that is to the people so that when it comes time to reauthorization, it will get reauthorized, and hopefully the legislature will be wise enough to remove that sunset so we don't have to have this silly debate anymore. This is just too important to making sure Montana's health care is met.
We move on to the next question, and I want to talk a little bit about renewable energy. And Mike, this will be your question. Renewable energy has become an important source of income for many property owners, workers, and, of course, counties around the state of Montana. What are your plans for renewable energy in the economy?
Sure. And I think, you know, Montana right now is in a phase of transition when it comes to energy development. We've been an energy developing state throughout our history, and it's been an important part of our economy. But we also know that that is changing and that renewable energy is really important. I'm standing in a house right now that we have solar panels on our roof. We did it because we thought it was the right thing to do. And I just think that we know we have tremendous capacity in Montana to produce a great deal of solar and wind energy, geothermal. We're very creative. We're very innovative. As a state, though, we can't wait for this to catch up with us. We need to be leaders and be leading on the cutting edge of the development of renewable energy throughout Montana and continue to remain an energy development giant in this country, helping power the world as we have in the past. Only we're going to be powering it somewhat differently with renewables. And that's how we're going to continue to create good jobs and make sure we're doing what we can to produce energy.
You're listening to a live candidates debate from the Northern News Network. Let's pause 10 seconds for station identification.
This is KGVM Bozeman.
I would ask you, what are your plans for renewable energy in the economy?
Yeah, well, Montana has an abundance of natural renewable resources, wind and solar, hydro, and we should use them, and we should use them responsibly. Look at Judith Gap. There are jobs in wind and renewables. And you know who pointed this out to me most recently? It was Brian Schweitzer, whose grandpa had wind turbines on his farm. Montana should be leading in wind production, and we aren't. We're rated fifth in potential, and we're 24th in production. I don't think we're doing enough. I think we can do more, and in our administration, we'd move urgently to do that.
Let's go on to the next question, and obviously this is on everybody's mind, and Whitney, this is your question to start with. The COVID-19 pandemic, it has altered our lives greatly, as kind of an understatement. Many people have been forced to work online due to stay-at-home orders. Seed stock producers have depended on the internet for auction of their sales of bulls. Many marketing services, government portals, jobs, educational opportunities, and more rely on the internet. This has underscored the importance of the need for the broadband access to rural Montana. I ask you, what would you do to ensure that all Montanans have access to high-speed broadband and cell services throughout the state of Montana?
Yeah, great question. We do need to close the digital divide between rural and urban Montana. Over the past month, we've been tucked into our homes, unable to travel, dependent on the internet to do our jobs, kids to do their schoolwork. And more than ever, I do think Montana understands how centrally important broadband in particular really is. 90% of urban Montanans have access to the broadband, but only 60% of rural Montanans do. But there's also a huge difference in what it costs, and that's not right, and we need to fix it. Infrastructure is the future. From infrastructure of the past, we think of as, you know, roads and bridges and sewers, and infrastructure of the future must also include broadband. And we need to treat it that way. We need improved mapping. We need a capability to expand in improved mapping. We need increased dialogue, I think, with the big companies as well as the federal government, and both have funds for work like this. We have to expand access to farmers and ranchers, and it will increase both work, virtual work, and productivity.
Thank you. And Mike, we'll turn it over to you. What would you do to ensure that all Montanans have access to high-speed broadband and cell services, Mike?
Well, let me first tell you about what I have been doing. I've had the privilege of working on a project called the Main Street Rural Partnership. And we've been traveling around the state, meeting with rural communities, talking about their needs and their dreams and goals and desires. And almost everywhere we go, broadband comes up. Just give you an example. The town of Troy identified broadband as one of their greatest challenges. You know, we've been working with them and working with a major company to come in and to work with that community to talk talk about what options that they have, and then ultimately how they afford to do to expand on their broadband and make it a better situation. So I've been working on this. It's something that's very important to Montanans. With COVID, we have seen just how important it is through our because the number of kids who have been online getting educated, the fact that telemedicine continues to need to be improved upon, and that's one way we're going to reach out into rural areas. So it is going to be a major investment by this by us, and we will make sure that it remains front and center in front of our administration.
We move on to the next question, and we'll start again with you, Mike. Farmers and ranchers, years of low commodity prices have contributed to increasing stress on our Montana farmers. Regrettably, we have seen an uptick in the number of farmers' suicides across the country. What can be done to address rural mental health and prevent the high rate of suicide?
It's something we have to recognize, and it is true. Montana overall has too high of a suicide rate compared to, you know, per capita. It's something we definitely need to be mindful of and looking and working on constantly. First of all, I want to talk about the positive side. We need to make sure that the economics of agriculture changes and that farmers can get a fair price for what they're doing, and people in agriculture can get a fair price for what they're doing and the food and the commodities that they're producing. But even if there are other issues that are causing the situation you just discussed, we need to make sure that Montana is investing more in our mental health system, making sure that telemedicine is more available and that resources people who are providing behavioral health services, that we find ways of getting more of those people throughout Montana. It's a struggle throughout this country, but in Montana in particular. So we need to figure out how to build that workforce to help provide a better service to the people when it comes to mental health.
Ed and Whitney, we would ask you the same question, please.
Yeah, thank you for that question. So a farmer friend of mine recently told me that he's lost 5 friends in the last year alone. In rural Montana, the problem is even more acute. Services are just not readily available. And so to the earlier question on broadband, increasing telemedicine is centrally important here. And mental health care providers who can help ensure that every family has access to mental health care. Look, I believe a budget is a reflection of our values and our priorities. And this one would be at the top of my administration. In 2017, there were drastic cuts in mental health services statewide. In Billings alone, 8,000 people didn't get the mental health care they needed. And in Livingston, a facility closed. That's the case all over this state. And as you talk to community health providers, they will tell you they were hanging on by a shoestring before coronavirus. And now it's even more of a problem.
Let's stay with you, Whitney, and I want to talk climate change a little bit. Obviously, we've dealt with this and continue to deal with it. How can agriculture and the government work together to address climate change?
Yeah, well, look, our fire seasons are longer. Our rivers are drier and warmer. And I've talked to farmers all over the state, and every single one of them will tell you the growing season is different now than it was 30 years ago. In fact, my running mate, Buzz, and his wife, Lori, are just about to harvest, and they harvest at different times than his grandpa did. So we need a Montana-made solution. I'm really looking forward to seeing the work of the Montana Climate Solutions and seeing what they come up with. If groups as diverse as the Sierra Club and the Montana Petroleum Association can come together on solutions, I would certainly honor that work. And farmers can and should be central to the solution, and they can profit from it. I'll promote carbon markets that pay our farmers to do what they do best, take care of our soil, which is one of nature's best carbon sinks. There's money in that dirt, and we should go get it. And of course, there's clean renewables, which are a huge part of the solution, and I would work to promote and grow renewable energy development across the state.
Thank you. And Mike, same question to you.
Well, I have to say that I am very pleased with the council that our administration has put together, and I think they're coming up with some very good ideas. And I think we're going to have to work hard to implement many of those. And I can tell you this, in this particular case, our work will not be done for a long time. When I'm elected governor, one of the things that I want to make sure we're doing is that we're including young people throughout our administration and all these discussions, but in particular with climate change, because this is an issue that they're going to be dealing with in their lives as well. Obviously, I've been a big promoter of renewable energy. I've been a very big promoter of making sure that our agricultural community is recognized for the work that they do. Absolutely. There is money in the soil, and it's in health. Soil health is very important, and it is a place where we can capture carbon. When there is a carbon market, and we need to be promoting that, that's a good place to start, and our people who work the land can benefit greatly from that.
We will stick with you, Mike, and talk about food safety. Food safety policies can and should protect consumers without limiting farmers, ranchers, and small food processors who sell into local markets. How will you promote local food production and marketing opportunities?
Well, that's a great question, and it's something that I really believe in, and it's something that we've been greatly involved in over the course of my tenure as lieutenant governor. First of all, I think people love to know where their food comes from. They want to know that it's how it's been raised and how it's been grown, and that helps build communities. It helps build community resiliency, and it helps promote really good eating. We have a growth program in the agricultural department that we continue to invest in, making sure that local families can have access to resources to get them into more organic farming and to help them market their products locally. We need to be promoting this throughout the state. We need to be promoting it within our school systems for the lunch programs and other programs out there where we are selling commodities into these programs. This is a great way for us to market Montana products. We know, as I said earlier, they are premium in the eyes of many people. Why shouldn't we be proud of what we have here and make sure we're doing everything to market them to the fullest extent?
And we'll turn this over to you, Whitney. How would you promote local food production and marketing opportunities?
So keeping Montanans safe and healthy is always going to be number one. And I think we need to get smarter and better about food safety. It's wrong that our friends at Yellowstone Grassland Beef can't market their beef out of the state because of concerns over the ability of state inspectors to inspect it. So, I mean, think of it. If I can trace shoes from an Amazon warehouse to a shipping facility to my front door, we should be able to do the same for Montana products. It's not rocket science. It's barcode, and it's a bit of technology, and I think we need to get on with that. Now more than ever, I think we're seeing a real weakness in our food supply chain. And we have to diversify it and make sure it's always safe. But we also need to make sure that we make it easier for local producers to market their products to the public. We need to be innovators here. I'll bring energy into modernizing our inspection system and giving inspectors the tools they need.
The next question is, after the Japan bilateral agreement, USMCA, and China phase one deals were signed, the already low agricultural commodity markets went down or stayed the same. Within weeks of signing the phase one deal, China bought 1 million tons of wheat from Australia, Canada, and France, and not one bushel from the United States. We are selling less to those countries now than we ever did. So my question is, what are your plans to help get the markets back on track? Whitney?
Yeah, so let me start with my running mate, Buzz. He's led our team on developing an ag policy, which folks can go to whitneyformontana.com and read. Buzz also is the president of the National Barley Growers Association. He's a business person. He's a farmer of the year, in fact. He's traveled around the country and the world to market made in Montana ag products, and including our world-class grain and beef. And he'll continue to do that for Montana's farmers and ranchers as lieutenant governor. You can't have a better advocate for ag producers than a farmer. The USMCA can work as long as the implementation includes the ability for Montana farmers to move U.S. wheat into the Canadian food grade market with the same access that Canadian wheat moves into ours. the Japan bilateral trade agreement. We support speeding up a phased-in tariff reduction with our competitors, and we'll also actively engage in marketing the quality of Montana products to regain our markets and expand opportunities.
Thank you. And Mike, what is your plan to help get those markets back on track?
Well, again, I want to talk a little bit about what I've been able to do, even when before those agreements were signed. You know, I spent some time traveling around. I went to Mexico with a trade mission with the Wheat and Barley Commission, went with a farmer who's a good friend of mine, Mike O'Hara. And we were talking about the great products that we have in Montana. We were meeting with some of our customers who were kind of suffering because they didn't have access because of a lack of a trade policy. We want, you know, trade is done by the federal government, but we wanted them to know just how important their work was for us and our partnership. We're going to continue to do that. You know, trade is not something that you just do once and then you declare victory. Trade is something that constantly has to be working on. I've been proud to be able to work with delegations from Japan and talk to them about how important it is that we continue our business with our wheat products. I've been proud to deal with the Mexican customers that we have, and we've talked to people up in Canada. Those are our biggest trading partners. We need to continue to build those relationships. As governor, that's going to be a priority, and I'm going to do it.
Let's talk about our food supply system a little bit. Mike, this is your question. The Holcomb fire and coronavirus have put a spotlight on our food supply system. It's broken. Since the beginning of the crisis, multinational packers have been charging 20% more for meat to consumers and paying 30% less to producers. In the minds of the Montana Farmers Union, this is price gouging. What action would you take to promote a competitive and fair marketplace?
Well, I think their concern is absolutely correct. It is it's a broken system. We've seen more, you know, a handful of multinational corporations taking over everything. We've seen our farmers and ranchers get nothing out of it. In fact, I've heard that in like 2018, the average income for a farming family was a minus $1,500. You can't pay your bills with a minus figure. The income for a family farm, it was, if they made an income, came from a second job. You can't do that. I think that I can tell you right now, we will fight like heck to make sure that we're getting everything going, to make sure that we expand on our local packing capabilities. The state, I think, can be involved in that. Some of the COVID money might even be able to go to some of our current packing facilities so they can expand capacity so that we can really market Montana products and get more money into the pockets of our farmers and our ranchers.
And we turn over to Whitney. What would be your action? What would you do to promote a competitive and fair marketplace, Whitney?
Yeah, well, Farmers Union is right. It's price gouging, pure and simple, and it's unacceptable. When there are four gigantic meatpacking companies controlling 85% of the nation's beef and pork supply, that's just plain wrong. And COVID-19 has underscored the fragility, I believe, of our food systems. We must build a reliable homegrown food system and one that brings value back to the farm and back to the ranch. The federal government has failed us on this, and Montana should stand up for itself. Too big to fail, didn't work on Wall Street, and it won't work for meatpacking processing either. Montana should be able to feed itself, and I will fight for our opportunity to do so. There are too few federal inspectors, and the rules were designed to protect those large corporate meatpackers, and we're going to work to change that. We need to work together to figure out how to increase local meatpacking facilities. Look, my friends, the Petersons over in Yellowstone County have some of the country's best beef. They should be able to ship it to customers across state lines. And as governor, I would champion their ability to do so.
Let's talk about education. Montana Agricultural Research and Experiment Stations have played a very critical role in education of our producers on new crops and farming practices. Whitney, will you support the state funding necessary for staff, faculty, and technology to bring state-of-the-art resources and research to Montana's farmers and ranchers?
Yes, absolutely. You know, before we got sidelined by coronavirus, we were traveling the state, and Buzz and I visited the Federal Ag Research Station in Sydney to learn a bit more about what they were doing to undertake the life cycle, studying the life cycle of grasshoppers, noxious weeds, and locusts, which are a real problem in sub-Saharan Africa at the moment. They also are working especially on wheat stem soft fly, So we spent some time with them talking about it, and their work is so important. It's innovative, and it showcases just how important it is for the federal and state governments to really work together. It also highlights the importance of cross-border collaboration with our neighbors, say, in North Dakota. And I would support these stations to do some additional things as well. Number one, researching organic agriculture. It's a growing market, and we need to pay attention to it. And then researching to make sure that we certify grain varieties in Montana that are not currently certified in Canada so that they can be sold on a competitive basis.
And Mike, I would ask you the same question.
You know, before the last legislative session, I had the privilege of visiting every one of the stations we have in Montana. And one of the reasons I did is because they had some needs that we needed to meet in the last legislative session. And I was very happy that we were able to find additional funding for them then. It was small, but it was a step in the right direction. I think we need to continue to make that investment. I know how important this research is for our local farmers and ranchers. I know how hard they work. We need to make sure that we're supporting them so that as people are moving into other crops and as they're looking at how to innovate their own process on their family farms and in their family ranches, they need that kind of help and support. And that's why it would be very important that we'll continue to support what we can do to make sure that those agricultural research stations are properly funded, doing the work they do very well, and working directly with our local producers.
And Mike, I'd just like to follow up here. What are your plans for the Montana Agricultural Research and Experiment Stations? What would be your plan?
Well, my plan is to work closely with them to find out what needs that they really have. But you also have to talk to the local producers and the folks that they're working with hand in hand on what's going on and what their needs are. And then we need to, you know, say this is important. This is going to help build the economy. This is going to help diversify our state agriculture. And it's going to make us more successful when it comes to our producing food for not only our state, but people around the world, because it's something we need to constantly be working on. That's the thing about agriculture. That's the thing about trade. Our work is never done.
And Whitney, I'd ask you the same question. What would be your plan for Montana's agricultural research and experiment stations?
Yeah, so I would say that, you know, this really is, again, about making sure that federal government and state government work together. And then importantly, you know, rural Montana farmers and ranchers were at the table helping to advise and make decisions and recommendations around what it is they most need to see. I would also, in addition to championing funding, I would want to be right next to those folks anytime they're making announcements. I think it's powerful when the governor uses the bullhorn that they have to promote our state, and that would be one way I'd do it.
Mike, we've got the next question for you, and the question is, the CSKT Water Compact was ratified in the Montana legislature in 2015. Water in our state is a very valuable resource, as we know, and the CSKT Water Compact project, this resource, many farms and ranchers depend on their water rights. The CSKT Water Compact will provide certainty for water users on the Flathead Reservation as well as statewide, removing the threats of litigation. It must be ratified by Congress. Mike, if elected governor, how will you assist in the ratification of the CSKT Water Compact?
That's a great question. It's a very important question. First of all, I am a great supporter of that particular compact. Water in Montana, water in this world is probably the new oil, in my opinion. So we need to treat it very carefully, and we need to make sure that issues surrounding that particular water compact are resolved. If that doesn't get resolved, it could throw so much commotion into the whole water rights system, and frankly, we can't afford that. Some of you may know that as a lieutenant governor, I have been working very hard on the St. Mary's regional water system that feeds the High Line of Montana. So that's how important water is. I know what it means to communities. I know what it means to agriculture and to the survival. So I will fight incredibly hard to make sure, working with our delegation, working with other friends that we have in Congress, to make sure that we can get that compact taken care of as quickly as possible, and basically take that issue out of consideration, because we can't fight over it anymore.
And Whitney, if elected as governor, how will you assist in the ratification of the CSKT Water Compact?
Yeah, well, I agree 100% that it must be ratified by the Congress. You know, it did pass the legislature in 2015 in a bipartisan way. Obviously, not always an easy task, but that was a huge success. And now Congress needs to follow suit. I would work closely with our delegation and CSKT to get this done. I appreciate that both Senator Tester and Daines have provided leadership on this and hope that they'll, of course, continue to do so. I am deeply concerned that Congressman Gianforte has hedged. He should support it unequivocally, and he hasn't. Water is important to our ag producers and everyone, and I would do everything I can to make sure that this finally gets done.
We will stay with you, Whitney, and we'll get into the youth and young farmers. The average age of a farmer and rancher in Montana is 57. Fewer young people are returning back to the family operation. Fewer are still able to start their own operations. What can be done to support our beginning farmers and young farmers and ranchers?
Yeah, great question. So as our population ages, we do have to get to work, and we have to get to work urgently to support a new generation, to bring them into farming. So there's a number of things that I think we can do. We can promote low interest loans. We can support programs like FFA and 4-H, which I was a young member of. We can continue to support extension programs and sort of modernization in general. Here at the University of Montana, they've got a really good sustainability ag program, and we should continue to support programs like that. It has created a whole bunch of young people who want to farm. And then I think we should help scale up work, like up in Kalispell. They've got a program that, that they run through the Agricultural Education Center. They have a farm up around Flathead where they offer vocational training on a county-owned piece of land that provides city kids hands-on training and experience they need to spend the afternoon on farms, giving young ones the chance to learn about plant and animal science. I think that's really important, and we need to continue and scale up programs like that.
And Mike, I'd ask you the same thing. What can be done to support our beginning farmers and our young farmers and ranchers?
Well, I've had a privilege as Lieutenant Governor to meet often with groups of young farmers that are just starting off in the business, or they're starting to, you know, off on their own adventure in this wonderful business called agriculture. And I've met with little kids who have come from farm families and are involved in all sorts of programs. And it really does give me great hope that we do have a future. But I think as a partner with agriculture, we have programs in the state such as the Growth Through Agriculture program through the Department of Agriculture that can help provide a certain amount of funding. And just recently, I think we just gave out some really nice grants to help promote people and assist them in either expanding or diversification, but helping them continue to succeed and grow and to be prosper. So again, those are the sorts of things that the state can do to help, I think, promote this, to help sustain them, as well as, you know, encourage more people to get into this very important line of work, because it's what feeds the world.
Our farmers in Montana are pretty creative, and last year, because of the trade wars, most crops were unprofitable. Many producers tried hemp for the first time. Montana had the most acres of hemp planted in the United States. There were a few opportunities to market that crop. Mike, we'll go with you. How do you see added value to hemp and other crops grown in the state of Montana?
Well, again, you're right. Montana was one of the leaders in hemp growth, and it didn't turn out not to be a great year. But we still know that there's a lot of interest in hemp products, especially the oil. But I think we need to see what we can do to help strengthen the infrastructure for the folks who are going to be producing the products of hemp. And I think that's been one of the issues that we've been dealing with. And I think the state can certainly be involved in those discussions and working with those companies and promoting good partnerships so that we have an infrastructure in the state so that hemp producers have some place to sell their product and they can sell it at a profit. I think we also need to look at ways to make sure that hemp, we look at all sorts of ways of using the hemp product. I mean, again, right now, the oil is where most people are talking, but we know the fibers can be used for many things, and it's strong, it's good. We need to look at ways of bringing in an infrastructure that can help us move hemp in that direction. Use it all, use it wisely.
And Whitney, how would you answer that question?
Yeah, well, I want to help Montana farmers increase their incomes and increase their options. And I think hemp, you know, is one way to do that. I commend Senator Tester and the Department of Agriculture for their work on moving this forward. You know, the federal government, again, has failed to lead on this. And so Montana is going to have to stand up for itself. And I want to work alongside farmers to help them do that. I think about 300 farmers tried farming hemp last year. And I want to make sure any farmer who wants to try can. We've seen great progress in other non-traditional crops like pulse crops, so much so that we're now leading the country in pulse production. And I think we can do a better job at adding value to all of these products before we ship them out of state.
Great answers. Thank you all for answering those questions. We'll go to our closing mark or our closing remarks here, and we will start with you, Whitney. Closing marks, comments that you'd like to pass along?
Yes, please. Well, thank you so much to the Farmers Union. Folks, we face a long road to economic recovery here in Montana, and these new challenges require new skills in the governor's office. On day one, Buzz and I will focus on four goals. First, we'll help rebuild our economy and create good paying jobs. Second, we'll tackle the high cost of healthcare and drive down the cost of prescription drugs. We'll expand access to public education, including to our littlest learners, and we'll protect our greatest asset, our public lands, our air, and our water. I think we need someone with business experience, a fighter, who will bring big, bold ideas to Helena, and I'll have a farmer at my side. Rural Montanans must help lead on all decisions for our state. Buzz runs a farm. He's respected nationally. He's president of the Barley Growers Association, and who better to represent our ag producers here at home and around the globe? Heck, Buzz even has a barley named after him. Look, this virus shook our economy and brought Montana to a standstill, and I am the only Democrat running for governor who's created jobs and rebuilt communities after disasters, and I would be honored to represent you, and I'm asking for your vote.
Thank you. And Mike, for your closing comments.
Thanks very much. Whitney, thank you so much for joining us and to everybody for putting this on. It's been such an important discussion. You know, I'm the only candidate in this race who's made a decision to dedicate my life to serving the people of Montana. That includes supporting the work of farmers and ranchers in Montana. I've traveled across this state for many years, meeting with the families who've dedicated their lives to feeding Montana in the world. I know these issues not because I've lived them, but because I've listened to those who do live them. I know the job of state government isn't always to try to solve all our farmers and ranchers' problems. Our job is to let you do your job and be prepared to be a partner with you when you need some assistance. Together, we can address the new challenges we're facing and work to create new opportunities for our state without forgetting our roots. Tradition and innovation are not in competition. Innovation is grounded in our great tradition. I'm Mike Cooney, and as governor, I'll be a strong advocate and a partner to Montana farmers, ranchers, and our agricultural community, just like I have my entire life serving the people of Montana. Thank you. Stay healthy. Keep your communities healthy.
Thank you guys very much. What a great debate. And we will have a brand new governor coming up very soon. Obviously, we'll get our primary elections June 2nd. Mail-in ballots will come out. And we appreciate you guys for the time that you have given us and what you have done to serve the great state of Montana. We appreciate that. Thank you to the Montana Farmers Union for this wonderful debate. And we hope everybody gets out and casts their vote. Primary election June 2nd.
Good evening once again. I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, Montana's longest-running statewide daily talk show. That was moderator Jim Sargent from Kohl's Media. Thank you guys for joining us. Good job, Jim. And also, good job to the candidates tonight. Earlier on in this virtual debate, it was Tim Fox and Dr. Al Olashevsky. Greg Gianforte was unable to make this debate tonight. That was the earlier portion, and you just heard the latter portion here, the second half of this virtual debate. Ag focus, a lot of great territory covered. Healthcare, obviously, a big concern here, affordable and reliable. COVID-19, you know, that highlighted the need for broadband services. We heard the candidates discuss that. Getting the economy back on track. A big part of Montana's economy is ag, and they also focused on commodity prices and how ag and government can work together to address climate change, food safety policies. We'll come on back here in just a little bit and get some analysis, some post-debate analysis from Montana Farmers Union President Walter Schweitzer. So back with more in just a moment.
You're tuned in to KGVM Bozeman. We are 95.9 FM on your radio dial and KGVM.org online.
This is KGVM Bozeman, 95.9 FM and KGVM.org. Do you have a local business in Gallatin Valley? Are you interested in promoting your business? KGVM is looking for you. Gallatin Valley Community Radio is looking for local businesses to spotlight to our listening area of 75,000 people. Visit our website, kgvm.org. Call us at 406-624-6534 or email kgvmunderwriting@gmail.com to find out more.
The Greater Gallatin United Way, together with the Bozeman Area Community Foundation, have joined together to launch the Southwest Montana COVID-19 Response Fund. This fund has been put in place to rapidly mobilize resources to meet increased needs in our local communities resulting from the COVID-19 pandemic. Those wishing to help people and organizations most impacted during the outbreak in Southwest Montana are encouraged to donate to the Response Fund. One of their philanthropic partners, AMB West Philanthropies, is supporting the launch of this coordinated effort with a $100,000 challenge grant to help leverage donations to the fund by providing a match for the first $100,000 raised. If you'd like to consider making a donation to the fund, you can find more information at greatergallatinunitedway.org on the internet.
Third, 4 out of the 5 major party candidates for the state's top office, governor of Montana. Once again, Republican Congressman Greg Gianforte declined to participate. And as you heard, and you can imagine, that was a factor that was addressed in a couple of occasions here. I'm Tom Schultz. Thank you for being here. This debate specifically focused on Montana Ag, and it was presented by, in part, the Montana Cattlemen's Association, the United States Cattlemen's Association, and the Northern Plains Resource Council. The debate's main sponsor was Montana Farmers Union, and joining us now for some reaction post-debate is MFU President Walter Schweitzer. And again, Walter, I appreciate you being here. One thing I thought, one of my initial reactions here is that all 4 candidates, pretty confident, pretty well-versed, I thought, in ag policy across Montana, and they have pretty deep ties to Montana too, don't they?
Yes, they do, and it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed watching this debate and the discussion on the issues that are important to agriculture and rural Montana.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well, and I did notice that there was a little more crosstalk in the GOP side of it versus the Democratic side, and that allowed a couple more questions for the Democrats. Did you find that interesting?
I did, yeah. They did seem to disagree on CSKT for sure, and country of origin labeling in the Republican primary. Tim and Al had a pretty good spirited debate on it. I enjoyed watching that. I as you know, I already stated my position on country of origin labeling, and I just think that right now, we're misleading our consumers, and we need to do something about that.
Anything else that stands out? I know we had questions regarding health care. That's obviously important. COVID-19, again, that question was kind of tied into a couple of things about getting the economy back on track. And it's going to, you know, this is going to hurt the state budget. It's hurting everybody's budget, and it's hurting a lot of things out in ag country, too, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And one of the things that did concern me a little bit was when Al and Tim in the Republican debate brought up the coal trust and talked about breaking open that coal trust to use it now for this current crisis. And, you know, they missed the point of that coal trust. It was created to share the royalties of the coal from this generation with our future generations. And it was also set up to take the revenue from that trust to invest in the infrastructure in rural Montana. And the last thing I would like to see is that trust broken open and take this critically important money that's paid for water and sewer in our small towns in Montana.
And I get that, but I appreciated the fact that they were dealing, I thought, a little more even-handedly when it comes to really realizing that we are going to face a budget crisis because of this, and not everybody is going to have money to meet all of the priorities. It just can't be yes to everything. So there's going to be some tough decisions ahead, that's for sure. What did you think of this virtual format, Walter?
I think it worked out pretty well. I was not that excited about it in the first place. I was looking forward to the live interchange But you know, when we proposed this Zoom, what disappointed me the most is that Congressman Gianforte, with a Zoom type virtual debate that he could have done from anywhere, at home or wherever he was at, that he couldn't have taken 45 minutes out of his busy schedule to discuss the issues that are important to rural and ag country.
Well, Walter, thank you for your participation. Thank you again to Montana Farmers Union for sponsoring this debate. And we will see you next week, right?
Yep, and thank you for covering this.
Yeah, and thanks to all of our affiliate stations as well. Mark your calendar for next week, too, because we'll be broadcasting. Local affiliates will be able to pick this up through the Northern News Network. Again, ag focused. It'll be the congressional debate. So major party candidates vying for Montana's lone seat in Congress will be front and center then. But here in just a moment, we'll wrap it up. This is the Montana Farmers Union gubernatorial primary debate on the Northern News Network.
Hello, I'm Matt Kelly, health officer for the Gallatin City County Health Department. Governor Steve Bullock this week issued a directive to all Montanans requiring them to stay at home starting Saturday, March 28th. That means staying at home as much as possible, except for essential activities. Those essential activities include things like movement necessary for health and safety, seeking medical care or picking up prescriptions, and when necessary, going to the grocery store for food and supplies. You can also go to work if your job is considered an essential business or operation, and you can care for others who cannot otherwise complete essential tasks on their own. The governor's order also allows us to go outside to get exercise, fresh air, and sunshine, just so long as you're strictly maintaining physical distance from people with whom you do not live. All over our county and our state, our healthcare providers and emergency responders are sacrificing to serve us all. My request to all of you is to think about those men and women going to work every day, sacrificing for us. Please make the sacrifice for them so we can slow the spread of this virus and buy time for those working so hard around the clock. We are Montanans. We stand by one another, and we can all make daily decisions to create the distance to defeat this virus. When in doubt, stay home.
KGVM thanks the Community Food Co-op for their support. Local, independent, and community-owned since 1979. For more information, go to bozo.coop.
Now we'll get back with the wrap-up from the Montana News Network of this debate.
It's an all-mail-in election for this primary, and that's due to the public safety concerns over COVID-19. And I hope you guys are doing okay. Thank you, Montana, for all sticking together through this. It ain't over yet, but we're not done yet either, so keep hanging in there. If you get a chance, give a big thanks to your local station for bringing you tonight's debate, and a thanks going out to all the candidates as well for tonight. A reminder that next week at this time, we'll bring you the Republican and Democratic candidates seeking the office of U.S. Congressman. So for producer Josh Rath, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana. Thank you again. You've been listening to the Montana Farmers Union gubernatorial primary virtual debate, a presentation of the Northern News Network.
All right. Thank you for tuning in. We hope that you found this information useful, and it will help you to make your decisions on your upcoming mail-in ballot.